Hi, I'm Jenny. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 13th, 2002, and I have a sponsor, and my home group is the Midtown Group in Maryland, and they meet on Sunday nights, actually right now, not right now, but out right after this meeting, about 7:15, 7:30, and it's a speaker meeting, and if you're ever in the area, it's a really fun meeting. It's a lot of people, but everybody's like in this group, very warm, very welcoming, and we'll welcome you at the meeting. I'm a little bit nervous. I always get a little bit nervous. And I'm really, Sam, thank you for asking me to speak at the meeting tonight. And I used to not think it was, when people would be like, it's an honor and a privilege to speak at AA, and I'd be like, Like, I'm not, like, not that it wasn't, but I was like, it doesn't feel like a privilege. It feels really upsetting. But, but I, you know, but like, but then I think about how much it helps me when I hear somebody who I relate to. So, I was taught, you know, I say yes in AA, and I actually do like speaking at meetings, like now. I mean, I get very nervous and very worried about it, but I can't be like, oh, shucks, I don't, like, I like doing it. So, I feel good afterwards, you know. Because and it helps me when I tell my story, actually, because it helps me remember, like, emotionally. I don't know. I feel like the longer I've stayed sober, when I was very new, I could remember very well how it felt, like how it just felt drinking and how bad it was. But as I've gotten more sober, like, things in my life calm down a lot, and I feel happy most of the time. And other than when I'm working directly with a newcomer or telling my story, I don't remember just how really bad it was. So anyways, I'm going to tell in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I'm going to get sober in my lead, and I'm going to try to not talk really, really fast. So anyways, that's the goals. Prayed. I'm ready. Anyways. So, I started drinking when I was 18. That's when I started. I had gone away for college, and I had never been away from home before up until that point. I just stayed with my parents. I think they tried to send me to sleepaway camp when I was like 13, and I cried so much that they had to come get me because I couldn't deal with it. Like, so I cried and cried, and then on the third day, it was supposed to be 2 weeks, they came up and picked me up and brought me back home because the counselors called home. And I'd gone like on little trips with my friends, but that was it. So, and for the most part, like, I had very loving parents and a loving family. I had, you know, my family was there was alcoholism in my home growing up. I don't think that necessarily makes me an alcoholic, but if you grew up in an alcoholic home, I don't really need to, you know what that's like. There's not much to say about it, but my family really loved me, and they did, like, they tried, like, they gave me everything that I needed, and, you know, but from a pretty early time in my life, I felt like I was worse than everybody else, just from it, like, a young age. And I don't see any reason why I felt like that. It's just how I remember feeling most of my life before I picked up a drink. And I couldn't have really put it into words that that's how I felt, but it is. But, like, when I got sober, I started to, like, realize that those were the right words for it. And I just was a very anxious kid, just very, very anxious and very tightly wound about everything. I had, like, certain days of the week, like Wednesdays, I had to wear pink. I don't know why, just very rigid. I just had, like, a way of things because I just felt unsettled inside most of my life. And to kind of sum it up, I just felt like I was obsessive. I had really obsessive thinking from an early age before I ever drank. And I can remember, like, the firefighters coming to our school and maybe second or third grade, and just they do talks about fire safety. And, you know, and what I did was I went home for 2 weeks and I couldn't sleep at night thinking about what would happen if there was a fire in my house. And, like, if my parents died, would I live with my aunt and uncle? Should I save my sister or leave her? Just like, you know, just all the strategies in case the fire happened. And that's the best way I can describe it. I just thought like that from an early age. I just thought about things very intensely, and I was very intense myself. And I had friends. I didn't think I had friends growing up, but I did have friends growing up. I was surprised that people considered me their friends, because I didn't feel like I was connected to anybody really. I didn't feel like I fit in my family. I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere for most of my life. And so anyways, I was pretty shy in high school. I didn't really go to parties. I was part of my church youth group, and I really liked my pastor at my church, and I did stuff like that, but I'm just kind of withdrawn. I would read books and was a bookworm, and then I decided that when I went away to college, that I just thought, like, somehow that I was going to, like, make myself over. I don't know how this was going to happen, but I just decided, like, my senior year of high school, that when I went to college, it was going to be different, and I was going to be away, and I was going to, you know, it was like I could start all over, and I was just suddenly going to be this young woman who was brimming with confidence. I just, like, had these ideas. I was going to dress right. I was going to do all this stuff, and I mean, I just wanted to, like, be someone else, and I got there to college, and what happened was I cried for 2 weeks because I was homesick and I was scared, and I really did not know how to I did not know how to talk to people, and I just thought I was like, I felt like the world was ending. And then I went to my first party with my roommate. Finally, she was like, why don't we go to this party? And I was like, oh no, there's going to be drinking there, and just very dramatic. And I went, and it was a keg party, like at one of the fraternity houses. And what happened for me, like that night, that I believe is what makes me, part of what makes me an alcoholic, is that when I drank and got drunk that night, I felt like I had found a real solution for what was wrong with me. It was like the first time that I could remember feeling just being, like, equal to everybody else. I felt like I could talk to people. I wasn't, like, walking around looking at the floor and shuffling my feet. I wasn't self-conscious. I wasn't thinking at all about what anybody thought of me. And I really felt like that was the closest I remember feeling to being connected to people was when I drank. And I remember right away, and this is not everybody's experience, but my experience was that I remember the next day really thinking that, like, all that time in high school, like, all the cool kids were all drinking, and that this must be, like, why they seemed so comfortable all the time, because everybody looked like they were really comfortable, and I just felt awkward, and I felt like I looked awkward all the time, and I just felt like if I could just drink sometimes that it would be fine. But, you know, I never could have predicted, you know, at 18 years old when I started drinking that I was going to be an alcoholic, you know. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I have a lot of alcoholism in my family, but I didn't, it was just part of my family. Like, everybody in my family, they just, except for my mom, they just all drink. They all smoke pot. Like, that's what they do. So it was very normal to me to see people drinking a lot. And you know, I went from somebody who, at the beginning of college, I kind of, like, would look down my nose at other, like, students who drank on school nights, quote unquote. And then by the end, I was, you know, I had, like, end of college, I had a bar that I went to every single night of the week. And then, like, after college, I just kept going. Like, I got a job, and my friends started getting jobs, too, but they started kind of just, like, slowing down, and, you know, they were getting engaged, they were getting married, they were, like, they had to get in bed because they had to get up early for work. And I just thought they were really boring. I just didn't think there was anything wrong. I just kind of thought, like, I was telling somebody on the phone this earlier today, like, this girl who's new, I was telling her, like, I just had this idea of my, this crazy image of myself that, like, when I was drinking, that, like, I just thought I was going to be, like, really sophisticated. I'm just a girl who drinks. Like, I drink wine, and I'm going to have this fantastic, exciting life. And it was all in my mind. Like, there was nothing exciting or sophisticated about me. But it was, like, what I would tell myself, like other people, if I saw that other people my age or other my peers or my coworkers didn't drink, well, that's because they're older than me. Like, they're just, they're settled down. That's because they have a family. That's because they have kids. That's because they're not just as sophisticated as me. I just have to laugh when I say sophisticated about myself, because I'm not. And I wasn't then. So, you know, but what started happening for me is, like, with the drinking in a nutshell, is that it started getting more and more. And Like, I became, like, a person who drank all the time. And I just had to end up start going, like, to stay home and drink. I couldn't really go out and drink anymore because I would do really dangerous things when I was out, and I would get in a lot of trouble. And I would start fights with people. Like, I would get, whenever there was a bar fight, I don't know why I would go over there, but I would go to it. And, like, I would, like, get cut with beer bottles. Like, I wasn't, like, the target of the fight, but everybody would go that way, and I would stumble. I have no idea why I did that. I would stumble toward it. I got hit by a car walking home. Like, I just, like, things like that would happen. And then, you know, I just, my friends at this time, they just stopped. Like, my roommate would come home from work, and she would rush in her room and rush out because she didn't want to invite me with her to happy hour. Because my idea of happy hour, like, I would tell myself I was going to have two drinks, and then it would be 2 a.m, and that would happen. And that's, like, kind of what I've come to realize, like, that's my best, for me, that's one of my best definitions to myself of what it means to have a physical allergy to alcohol. Like, because when people would talk about the craving for alcohol when I was new, I would think, like, you know, I would envision myself, like, with a bottle of Jack Daniels being like, I must drink it, no. But, like, that wasn't my experience of craving. I mean, I'd had cravings for alcohol, but my experience was that I would really be intending to have 2 margaritas and go home. And once I started drinking, I couldn't stop until it was gone or until I was stopped. Like, someone had to stop me. Either I passed out, I went home with somebody, like, the bar closed down, I was always there when the lights came on. They were always trying to get me out. And then I kept on getting kicked out of bars because I would pass out in the bar. So I ended up just drinking by myself. But basically what kind of happened, I mean, a lot of things happened that I look back on, and, like, people, if I told somebody about these things that happened during my drinking, they would think, that's your bottom, right? Mm-mm. Like, I mean, I was in the hospitalized for alcohol poisoning, like, 3 times. That wasn't anywhere near when I came to AA. I was violently attacked when I was drinking in Baltimore one night. I ended up in the hospital for 2 days and was just really beaten up very badly. I'd gotten thrown from a car. And that was like 7 or 8 years before I ever came to AA. I just didn't know what alcoholism was. I didn't know that there was anything wrong. Everything that happened, it was just like, I didn't connect it to my drinking. I don't really feel like I was in denial of my drinking. Like, I was in a delusion. Like, I did not think it was abnormal. I thought it was unfortunate that these things happened, but I didn't connect the way I was drinking to those kind of things happening. And basically, like, I got so... when I would drink, there was always this little voice in my head that would tell me that, like, you know, it's going to get better. You know, like, I would get really wound up. Like, I wasn't doing my work. I was teaching kindergarten, and I would go into work every day. Like, I would get up, and I would be, like, shaking because I didn't know now, but I was withdrawing from the alcohol. But I would still get up and get dressed. I would go into work. I would never do my lesson plan, so I would be, like, constantly paranoid that the principal was going to walk by and wonder what in the world I was doing with my class. And I would tell myself, and I would just get more and more anxious. And, you know, I would tell myself that, like, the way I would get through the day was by telling myself that when I get off, I'm going to get something to drink. But I still, like, I just didn't connect it. I just was like, well, I just need to go to bed earlier. The problem is not that I'm getting drunk every night. The problem is that I, that I'm not getting to bed till 10, so I'll just start drinking at 4. And so I just drink from work. But I didn't know what alcoholism was. I didn't know there was anything wrong. But once I would start drinking, it was like I would just get this, like, my shoulders would drop, and I would just be like, you know what, it's not as bad as you think, Jenny. Like, I, of course, talk to myself in the third person because I think most alcoholics do. And I was just like, it's going to be all right, you know. You're going to, you know, you just need to, this weekend, just do your lesson plans, and you're going to get this together. Like, you know, this is not as bad as it seems. And I would feel relief, and I would feel like, you know what, like, it's going to be okay tomorrow. Tomorrow's a new day. I'm not going to drink tomorrow. I got to cut back on this stuff. Like, never, like, I'm going to stop, but, like, I need to, like, I just thought someday I would wake up and not drink like that. I just thought I was in a phase. Like, I was like, when I get older, I probably won't do this. But I don't know. Well, that's true. But, yeah, so, and what happened at the end was I would just be sitting on the balcony every night of my apartment. And my life just became, like, I would go to work, I would come home, I would stop at the liquor store or, like, a different liquor store so they wouldn't see me. I would get a bottle of rum. I would check and make sure my roommate wasn't there. Like, I, of course she knew I was drinking, but I thought that I was, like, fooling her. She had lived with me since college, like, but I really thought that she didn't know I was sitting there drinking. And I would like have this whole ritual where I would hide the rum in the planter out on the balcony, and it was like it was February, and I would get my coat on and go out and smoke and read like these really I would read like Sylvia Plath, The Bell Jar, like whatever like morbid, sad book you can think of. I would read that and drink. And what started happening was that I was sitting would sit on that balcony, and it was not high up. It was like two stories, but I would just be afraid that one day, without even knowing it, I was like, I started waking up, and I had been putting cigarettes out of myself, but not remembering doing it. And I started being blacking out every night, and I would fall on things, and things like that would happen. And I started being really afraid that I really felt like I was gonna like jump off something because when I was out with my friends, they would tell me these stories about me running into traffic, which I had like half believed, or like trying to jump on, like I had become suicidal, but like I was afraid that I was going to do that and not even be conscious, like just be blacked out and do it. And that really got my attention. But there was no long, it was like, I can remember like curling up on the side of my bed one night when I was drinking and just feeling like so small, like feeling like the whole world was like caving in on me. And I just felt like that voice wasn't there anymore. Like there was nothing telling me like it's going to be okay. It just had shut down. And during that time, I had been seeing a therapist because I had been seeing therapy. I knew there was something wrong with me for a really long time, just didn't connect it to the alcoholism. And I had been seeing therapists since I was like 18, like when I went to college. And every time they would mention drinking, I would leave because it just couldn't be that. Like they didn't know what they were talking about. So I would leave. And I had been seeing this person. And my roommate, she just was like, we need to talk about your drinking. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she ended up, she just, for some reason, she said, if you don't tell your therapist tonight about your drinking, I'm gonna call her. And I don't know why that bothered me. Like, it bothered me. So I was like, no, don't do that. So I'll tell her. So I went and told the therapist how much I was drinking. I told her I'm drinking a big bottle of rum every night. And this woman, like, she understood Alcoholics Anonymous, I think, because of the way she handled it. She didn't tell me I was an alcoholic. What she told me is she's like, we're going to deal with that later. She said, right now, she's like, I think you're physically addicted to alcohol, and I think you need to go into it. You need to detox, and I think that would be a good idea for you. And she literally said, go to work tomorrow. I'm going to call you at work. And she set the whole thing up. Like I don't think I had it in me at that point in my life. I was such a wreck. I could barely make it to work. I was calling out of work at 5 of 9 when the students arrived at 9. Like I was not able to function. Like at that point in my drinking, like my fingernails were yellow, my hair was falling out, my skin was gray. I walked around like just in filthy clothes. I couldn't, like I had an apartment, I had the means to do these things, but I could not like shower every day. I could not like get anything together. I would go out on weekends like with my coat, with my pajamas on in the middle of the winter, like if I had to go out of the house. And I was drunk most of the time. And she called and set up like a treatment place for me. And then she's like, she called me at work and she's like, tell your principal you're going to be gone for 2 weeks. And I was like, uh-oh. So I told her and she's like, go home. And she's like, they'll come in and get you. So, so I went home and this like white van came to my house and got me, these rehab people. And they put me in the white van. And they drew me like 2 hours away to this treatment center out in the Eastern Shore somewhere. And I don't remember much. I was there for 10 days. I don't remember much of it. I detoxed for about 4 days of it. I was like in the detox room and then my insurance ran out. But I don't remember it. But what I do remember is like sitting there and then putting like the hospital gown on because they had to like test my, I guess, blood pressure or something. And I remember just thinking like, there's something really wrong. And that's not everybody's experience, but I'm really glad that it was mine. But I just was like, something just hit me. Like, there's something really wrong. Like, there's something so bad wrong with me that they're sending me somewhere. Like, they're sending me to this place with all these doctors. You know, this isn't just like, oh, there's something a little bit wrong with you. And I remember I just started crying. And I don't remember much about rehab. Like, I was only there for a little while. But I do remember that I wouldn't talk, and I just would just kind of sit there. And I remember hearing birds, like, and I just remember thinking, like, these birds have been singing, and I haven't heard that. Like, I couldn't remember the last time I had heard birds, but but they're here, but I don't hear them. And I remember that them telling me that I needed to get a sponsor. They were like, when you get out of here, you're going to, if you need to get a sponsor, they're like, you're going to die. You're going to die if you don't get a sponsor and you don't go to AA. That's it. And like, and I believe them. And, because it was true. Like when they said that, I knew in my heart that it was actually true because I had been planning on killing myself, like a serious plan of doing that before I went there. And when I came out, what happened is that I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic, none of that, but I had said a prayer in there. Like one of the women who worked there was like, when's the last time you said a prayer? And I couldn't remember. And I used to go to church and all this stuff when I was little. So I went and said a prayer. And then like, I didn't want to drink anymore. Like I never wanted to drink after that moment. Like after when that morning when I woke up, but I really was afraid that I was going to, like something in me knew that I was going to want to drink again, even though I didn't want to drink right then. So I went home and dumped out all, like, the alcohol that was in all over my house, and I went to my first AA meeting, and I was afraid to call the inner group. I was too afraid to even talk on the phone to anybody. So, like, this guy had shown up at the rehab the night before, and he drew me a map. He was from Rockville, where I was from in Maryland, and he drew me a map from my house to this little AA club called the Del Rey Club, and he drew a map how to get there. I would never have gone. Like, I would have never made that phone call. Like, I was too afraid to even talk to someone on the phone once the alcohol was gone. Like, I was not somebody who was, like, quote-unquote functioning. And I don't really like that word anyway. I don't think most of the people that actually die of alcoholism are what people would consider, quote-unquote, functioning alcoholics. Like, it's a serious, it's a deadly illness. But I just wasn't able to do anything without drinking. And so I went to that first meeting, and I walked in, and I looked around, and I felt like I was, like, in middle school again. Like, when you come out of the cafeteria on your first day of school and you don't know where you're going to sit, I was like, my stomach started jumping and I was like getting ready to turn around and like leave. And this girl who was about, she could not have been more than 17. And she was like, you're new, come sit with me. And I ended up just like, I sat with her and like, you know, there's just like little things, like a lot of people did so much for me in AA. And, but those are the things that really, like, when I think about being a newcomer and coming here, it's, like, those little tiny things that people do that, like, where there could have been, like, these turning points where I might not have stayed. And, like, some, like, for whatever reason, like, she just happened to be there. Now, she went out and drank a couple months later, and I've never seen her again. But she helped me find my first sponsor, and she was, she had, like, 2 or 3 months, and she would be, like, Jenny, and I was like, what, Casey? She'd be like, let's go to dinner, and I'd be like, okay. So I'd follow her to dinner, and she'd be like, can you buy my dinner, because I don't have any money, because you're 17. So, and she said, like, the F word all the time, so I really liked her, because, like, that's what I was used to. I was used to that, and, like, people in AA just, like, I just felt like I was so much worse than everybody. Like, when I got here, I just had this idea, like, I don't know. I just was so empty when I got here and so upset. It was just like I was hoping that maybe, like, I didn't think I would smile again. I didn't think I was going to find friends. I didn't think any of that stuff was going to happen. But I thought, like, maybe if I come here, maybe I won't drink. Like, maybe that could really happen, like, that I can stay not drinking. And maybe I'll just be miserable, but I don't want to go back to what it was like before. And, you know, and I just liked, because all the attention was on her all the time because she would cuss all the time, and I didn't talk for a good 9 months, and now I never shut up, but, like, I was terrified, and I wore my winter coat until maybe June, because I didn't want anybody to look at me, and I would just walk around with my head down, and I would play with Twizzlers, like, I would just, like, and I got a sponsor very early on, and it was really important, and I'm really glad that I did, because I did not know what was going on. I didn't know what AA was. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I knew that I had a problem with drinking. I believed that. And I knew that I was a mess and that I was miserable. But I didn't know what that actually meant to be an alcoholic. And I met her about 2 weeks sober. And, like, my first sponsor was, like, she's like a little fairy princess. She was so pretty. She had this pretty little blonde hair. She just was comfortable with herself. That's the only reason. Like, I would see her talking to people, and I was like, I can't do that. Like, people seem to like her. That was it. Nothing else. And I felt like I was asking her to the prom. when I asked her out, like, to be my sponsor. And another person had approached me earlier than her and said, well, I can be your temporary sponsor. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And she was like, well, you know, if you feel sad or if you feel worried or you're afraid, you can give me a call. And I just did, I was baffled. Like, I did not know what that meant. Like, I remember going home and thinking, am I supposed to call her? Like, I don't, like, I was just a mess. But then, you know, different sponsors work for different people. And, like, my first sponsor, when I asked her, she just said, well, Jenny, she's like, you're going to call me every day. And I was like, okay. Like, she was just clear. Like, some people would, like, bristle at that. Like, that kind of, she was like, you're doing this, you're coming here, be at my house at 6 o'clock. She was very directive and, you know, and, like, for, and it that doesn't work for some people. But the condition I was in, that worked very well for me because I didn't have to, like, try to figure anything out. I just... okay, I guess she wants me to come to the meeting. Like, I couldn't think very clearly. Like, I had a lot of feelings, but not thoughts. And that was a good place to be in. So we started going through the steps, and we started going through them in the big book. And like, they would just, like, her and her boyfriend just took me everywhere. Like, I would just ride in their car all the time, and I just adored them. Like, I was a miserable mess. I didn't talk. I just cried most of the time and didn't say anything. But I would show up, and I would go with them, and they would make me go to dinner with everybody, and I would cry. And everybody would be like, are you coming back tomorrow, Jenny? And like, I would look at my sponsor, and she'd be like, and I was like, yeah, I am. And and gradually I started being able to, like, lift my head up and look at people. And I got, like, a service position. And my first service position in AA was I was in charge of the literature table. And I would hide, like where they have all those pamphlets right there. Like, I would sit behind it so nobody could see me. And and then I did that for about a month. And then my sponsor didn't go to that meeting, clearly. And then and then one time, this woman came in, and this was before, like, cell phones, before all the texting, because, like, now newcomers, you can know they're newcomers because they're going like this. They're just texting because they're nervous. They don't know what to do. They're just standing at the meeting, like, texting with their phone because they don't know what to do. But then, like, they go through the pamphlets, like, I'm doing something, like, because they're nervous. And it was like, oh, like, she's scared. Like, you know, it was like a new revelation to me that's why I was doing literature. You know, that a lot of newcomers come to the literature table and play with the literature because they're nervous and they don't know anybody and they're scared to talk to anybody. And the people I was with were just, like, they were in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And we just went everywhere. Like, we went to the meeting, we went to dinner, we went to get this person, we went on a 12-step call. We were always doing things and going places and riding each other's cars. And I started to feel like a person again. I don't know how else to say it. I started to feel like somebody was alive, back alive in here, and started going through the steps. And really, they just showed me, by the way that they live, like, that I could have, you know, I could be happy. And I remember my sponsor just, like, would whisper to me, and I, like, when I first started smiling, and she'd just be like, it gets better. And I just, you know, I started smiling, and I started, like, really looking forward to it. And AA was somewhere where when I first came, I would get nervous before I even went to the meeting, and within, like, 2 or 3 months, that's how I knew my day was going to be okay. Like, when I would get scared at work, I remember I was teaching kindergarten, and I would go hide in my book closet for my students, because it was hard just to get through a day. Like, any day was just hard. Like, nothing has to be wrong for me to have a hard day as an alcoholic. Like, it's all in here. So I would hide in the book closet, and I would sing and pray and be like, you know what, in 4 hours I'm going to be at my meeting. And I'm going to be okay. So that was really my first higher power, was just, like, I would pray. I didn't pray to my meeting, but, like, with a group of drunks, like, I started feeling safe, and I started feeling like I got to know people. And some of the things that happened throughout my sobriety, like, there's, like, when I look back, there's, like, certain points that were this, like, I was into the literature. I was telling somebody earlier today, when I was new, my sponsor told me, you know, to start my day with a prayer and read something from the literature, and she gave me kind of specific things to read. And I'm a big people pleaser, and I lived in an Oxford house, which is kind of like a halfway house. And but it came in really handy for me because I wanted, like, look at me. Look at Jenny. She's reading her AA books. Like, I would sit on at the because I wanted all the other girls from the meeting to know, like, how good I was doing in AA, and which is a character defect, but it got me in a very good habit of reading the literature every day, which I still do, and like praying, and you know, we just But there were, like, pivotal things. Like, I would read that literature and read it and read it and read it. My sponsor told me to do that because she said, when you're reading it, then you know, like, you know what's going on with you. Like, you know what's kind of happening. And she, told me about, like, the triangle, and I had to do all three. I couldn't just, like, do fellowship and be okay. Like, I couldn't just go to the meeting and hang out. And I couldn't just sit at home by myself and read the steps and get sober. And I couldn't just go around doing service. Like, I needed to do all three of those things. And my service when I was new was doing a literature table and driving everybody everywhere because I couldn't talk. So I would just drive everybody everywhere because I had a car. And but there's certain things I remember where, like, certain things that I really started connecting to the literature. And, like, I was thinking when I was about maybe a year and a half sober and I was living in that Oxford house, like, it burnt down. Like, there was a fire and everything burnt up. And I remember, like, for the first time, I remember, like, coming out of that fire and thinking, like, and being so grateful that I was alive and just thinking back to the year before, like, where I wouldn't have cared if I lived or not. And one of the things that also happened was I was working at a school, and, like, a couple months before that, like, I had been working on my 10th step and, like, coming to the 10th step in the literature, and there was a woman at my work, a parent, and like, I felt like she really had it out for me. Like, that's how I felt. Like, and, like, every time she saw me, there was some kind of complaint about something, and I just would get so angry, and my sponsor's like, well, what does it say in there? Let's read it. You know, you need to pause. You need to treat her with kindness and tolerance and patience, and you need to practice restraint. And I kept on practicing that and practicing that. And, you know, and I started to see over time that this woman would, I started noticing that every time she came in to the school, whoever was in front of her, she was nasty to. And it was like, oh, like, this doesn't have anything to do with me. But, it, like, it took doing that. But what happened, like, after that fire, is, like, I just kept on trying to go, like, it doesn't literally go out of my way to be with those we dislike. We go out of our way to be helpful to them and understand them. I kept on doing this, like, for, you know, and then her daughter, like, that was the school year before, and then her daughter was going to first grade, and her daughter had been in my kindergarten class, and her daughter was terrified to go to first grade and was sobbing. So I started taking her daughter in the morning down to the first grade class and coming to visit her. And, so, you know, just kept doing this, and she was still kind of nasty, but I was like, whatever. But things started changing. She ended up, like, writing this letter to the principal about how happy she was that I'd been so kind to her. And, like, after this fire happened, this woman, like, came up and, like, gave me, like, this check from her church, like, when she heard that my house had burnt down, like, and, like, it's not that she gave me money, that's not what it is, it's just that, like, these steps, like, I started, like, seeing, like, this impact of, like, the impact we have on people when we practice this as a way of life. It doesn't just, like, affect me and my sobriety, like, that's what it feels like. I have to do the stuff to stay sober. I was talking about that with somebody earlier, too. Like, this is not, like, a little thing I do on the side for self-help. It's not self-help. Like, I can't help myself. This is, like, I have to do this. You know, I will die an alcoholic death. I will go to prison. I will end up in an institution. I don't know which one. I don't get to pick which one of those will happen. You know, like, I don't know which one's going to happen. And, you know, so it's a way of life. But it ends up really, like, changing the lives of, like, really affecting people positively around me. And, you know, and then shortly after that time when I had that, after the fire and there was the car, there was all this stuff. And after all that happened, then my sponsor was like, you know, I would just complain to her all the time about how sad I was about things. And she's like, you are so, so self-absorbed. And she's like, you know, you've worked through the steps. Like, why aren't you sponsoring anybody? And I was just like, oh. I was like, I don't want to sponsor anybody. Like, I just kept on feeling like I'm a mess, because I was, like, I'm a big mess, and I need somebody to help me, like, I'm a wreck, like, sponsorship is not the answer for me, helping other people is not going to fix this, and I really just felt, like, whoever would ask me to sponsor, like, that would be out of their mind, but I was trying to do what my sponsor said, so I started trying to talk to newcomers and stuff, and I would be afraid to talk to them, even though, like, she would point out to me that, you know, they're probably a lot more afraid than me, and why don't I think about how they might feel instead of me. And then I started sponsoring, like, a girl came to my, so there was a woman at my school, and I would have lunch with her every day, and, you know, I just clicked with her right away, which was kind of funny, because I don't really click with people right away that are not in AA, especially at that time. I just don't connect with people. I'm like, I just am awkward, And but it, so that was kind of funny to me that, like, I connected with her right away. We would, like, laugh at lunch all the time. I'd been having lunch with her every day for, like, a couple months. And she didn't really know anything about me. I was outside of school. We just talked about the students and stuff. And then one Monday, like, the principal came with the announcements, and she was saying, like, she was talking about, you know, there's all these substitutes missing in the school system, and you better be dead if you call out on Monday. You better not call out Monday unless you're dead. Like, telling us not, we better be there. And then the girl, and, like, I would just kind of laugh. The kids weren't there when she said that. And then the girl, Allie, she just looked at me, and she was like, well, I should have called out dead on Friday. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, I tried to kill myself Friday night. I took a bottle of pills and ended up in the hospital. I think I'm an alcoholic, and I have no idea why I'm telling you this. And she became my first sponsee, and I ended up taking her to a meeting that day after work, and just starting to think, like, see, like, how big this was, that, like, that God really has a plan for everything, like, just, I just, there were, like, these pivotal times in my sobriety where I'm just, like, something just kind of, like, clicks. Like, I could not have planned that. I'm, like, obsessed about how am I going to get somebody to, how am I going to get a sponsee? How am I going to do that? And, like, this is, God just put this in place, you know, like, so I got to help her for a while, get her settled in Baltimore, and she's still sober, and, I mean, I don't sponsor anymore, but I started getting to take women through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've learned so much through helping newcomers and through sponsoring people. I've learned a lot about them, but a lot about myself, but a lot about my ego. Like, a lot had to change with me, and it talks about that in the 12th step, about, you know, that we have the pains of growing up, and, you know, I ask God every day to try to help me walk side by side with the new man and try to help them, and I ask for God's guidance, but my first experiences with sponsorship were a lot about me. Like, look at me, I have sponsees. I'm sponsoring this girl, like, you know, and I mean, I used to be ashamed to admit that, but I don't think it's that uncommon now, but, like, that's what I felt like, and I mean, of course, like, I was trying to help them, but there was always this, like, so I would get mad at them, like, if they didn't do what I said, and I just had, I was, like, my intentions were in the right place, but it just was a long period of growth, like, and I would learn from, I learned from each person I sponsor, like, you know, my sponsor told me, like, what you learn from the sponsor, when you're working with somebody who's not willing, or if it's difficult, like, they're teaching you so that the next person that comes along that is willing, like, I have a better understanding, a better way of approaching people, and that's been, like, one of, like, the biggest joy in my sponsor. Like, and I would have never thought that when I got sober, that, like, that helping other people would be what made me feel good. And when I first did it, like, it literally, like, it was the only thing that would make me, sometimes I would be so far into my character defects and so miserable, sober, and, like, the only relief I would get was when I was talking to a newcomer. So at first it was just like, that's what I'm doing, like, it was like a fix. It was like, I'm going to go talk to this girl, she's new, I'll feel better. And then it just became something that I really, like, actually enjoy doing now. And, you know, the women I sponsor now, it's like I get a lot more out of it than they get out of it, I think. Like, it helps my recovery a lot. It helps me be humble. It helps me to watch and pay attention to what I'm doing. A lot of times what I'm telling them is what I need to be looking at myself. And I really believe that God places the right people in our path at the right time. And in the last few years, you know, if you talked to me, like, even, like, 6 years ago, I would not, I was still so, probably for a good 5 or 6 years in AA, I was sober and I was doing the best I could, but I was really unhappy. Like, I had a lot of stuff, like, a lot of stuff, like most of us do, to get through, a lot of character defects, a lot of growing to do. I used to hate when my sponsor said, like, you're growing, and I was like, because it just meant a lot of pain, because I didn't realize it, but it was like, I was so holding on to these things in myself, and I didn't know I was holding on to things. And today my defects of character are still there, they're alive and well, but I don't get overcome by them, where they dominate my whole life, where, like, earlier in my sobriety, like, my big ones when I was newer were jealousy, possessiveness, self-pity, that's me. I used to love self-pity. I still do sometimes. Just so comfortable. Like, and I would have never told you I liked it, but clearly I did, because I would just keep on, I guess
nobody remembered to invite me.
You know, just like, you know, everybody would be sitting there after the meeting, hey, where do you guys want to go? Like, I would be sitting in a group of people. This is, like, not newcomer. I mean, newcomer, but not new. I would be, like, I'm talking, like, 3 or 4 years sober. Like, I would be sitting with people that were my friends after a meeting, and they'd be like, where do you guys want to go? And I would be like, if I didn't get a personal invitation, like, they don't like me. You know, I would just go home. Nobody invited me. You know, I had a lot of growing to do. Like, I think, a lot of times people say that they come into meetings and whatever age they stop drinking is, like, their maturity level or start to drink. No. Like, not for me. Like, I was, like, a 5-year-old. I related to my kindergartners. I still do. Like, when they would get in fights by the... I relate to them. Like, they'll come in the crying to me, Miss Albrecht, what... She's not my friend anymore. Why do you think she's not your friend? She won't let me play at the sand table. She's playing with her. I was like, yeah, like, that's sad. Like, you know, and I get to explain to them. But, I mean, I relate to those feelings, you know. But it's just, like, they don't overwhelm me. Like, I'm able to, like, to behave like an adult most of the time. And before, I mean, it just... I remember, like, around, it was probably, like, between, like, years 4 and 6, where I was just like, this is not working. Like, I have 3 service positions, like, I'm sponsoring people, like, I do everything my sponsor says, and this is not working. A is not working for me. Clearly, there's something else wrong with me other than alcoholism. And, like, because I just thought I was going crazy, and then, you know, my sponsor pulled out, like, the 12 and 12 and the 6 or 7 step, and she said, what does this say right here? And I said, the process of gaining a new perspective is unbelievably painful. And she's like, what does it say? What's that word? Unbelievably. Unbelievably painful. She's like, he chooses these words for a reason. It's accurate. Because that's exactly what I experienced. I was like, there's no way that the way I'm feeling is just because I'm jealous. There's no way. I have mental illness. There's something else wrong. There's something else going on. You know, some deep-rooted problem. It's not just that I'm jealous and immature. And it was. I just couldn't, you know, and that's not true for everybody, but for me it was true. Like, it's just, my jealousy had been with me since my sister was born when I was 5, and I looked in, they used to put the babies in nurseries, and I remember my dad holding me up and saying, that one is your little sister Courtney, and I said, I don't want her, I want that one. And I was jealous of her, I mean, from a child, but that's normal as a child. It's not normal when you're 17 to still be that jealous of your sister. You know, and when you're 18 and 19 and 27, and I'm coming to AA and I'm mad about, well, my parents paid for my sister to go to college 3 times and she failed out. I got straight A's. It was never enough. You know, all this stuff about my sister. Like, why do they let, and, you know, I took every opportunity most of my life to, like, point out her faults, to make her feel stupid, to talk down to her because I was so jealous of her because, like, she's prettier than me. You know, she's all this. Like, my parents treat her better. Like, all this resentment just, like, for years. And I came to AA, and that was one of the first resentments that when I did my 4-step, like, I felt that. I was like, I put that in black and white, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, she hasn't done anything to me. Like, she hasn't done anything but be born. And, like, today my relationship with my sister, so, like, I got to see that, and I got to see that, like, one of my big things with my little sister was that I felt like my parents loved her more, which is not true. But what I realized on a deeper level as time went by with that is, like, I don't want my parents to love me as much as my sister. I want my parents to love me more than my sister. That's it. Like, that's the ugly truth. And when I started seeing that, it was like, I can't keep on doing this. And I started to see things really clearly through doing the steps and having a sponsor who was telling me what was going on. And my amends to my sister has been to, like, point out her, the positive things about her. And that resentment actually, like, a lot of them took time to go away, but that was one of the first, that one, when I did my first 4-step, fell away, when I could clearly see myself and see that she hadn't done anything. And my whole perception of my relationship, my whole life with my little sister changed. And I remember, like, watching these videotapes. I don't know if this is popping in my head, sorry. I was watching these videotapes, like, about a year ago at my grandmother's house, and they were my little sister, and she's following me around with a video camera, and you can see her in the mirror because she likes to look at herself in the mirror. And she's about, like, 8, and she's just following me around like a puppy dog. And, like, my memory was that she didn't like me either. And I see this memory of her as a little kid just, like, looking up to me and, like, all this stuff. And so when I got sober, like, a lot of my amends had to do with, like, actually becoming, like, a big sister to her. Now, we're not children anymore. She's an adult, and I'm an adult, but been able to, like, a supportive person for her because we both have the same parents, and you know, and, like, she doesn't, I would like it if she came to AA, but she doesn't have, you know, she doesn't have, like, a support. I mean, she has her husband, and she has a little boy, but and she has friends, but it's not, you know, like, she's very private, like I was. Like, she very, like, keeps what's really going on to herself. And I'm someone in her life today because of Alcoholics Anonymous that I can show up for her. And, like, I'm not putting her down. And I'm, telling her how proud I am, even when my family is, like, teasing her and stuff like that. And show up for her accomplishments. And when she goes through things, she calls me. And, like, I'm able to be there for her, which I wasn't able to do growing up. But I don't, like, there's not an ounce of jealousy left there. For her, like, I, you know, I got to be the maid of honor in her wedding, both weddings, and and I was happy for her, and I got to be, like, the buffer for her and my mom, and, like, you know, on her wedding day, and, like, just, you know, and all this stuff is from AA, and I never saw these things, like, I don't know, I mean, I've been trying most of my life before I came to AA, like, I knew there was something wrong. And I knew I was unhappy, but I had no idea what alcoholism was. And I, you know, when I came to AA, I came in a really good place. Like, I came in a place that I was very broken apart. And I didn't have much left to fight with. And I'm really grateful that I came in that way because I was able to just listen to people. I was able to, like, you know, I felt like I was, like, on the bottom of people's shoes when I got here. Like, that's how low I felt. Like, I felt like, I remember I would go home and cry and, like, pray and thank God that people would even, like, come and wouldn't even invite me to dinner and stuff like that, or that people would even talk to me. Like, and that's what alcoholism did to me. It just gets me this place where I'm all by myself and I don't feel like I'm connected with anybody in the whole world, which is not true, but you know, so I was just, like, so grateful, like, people would just put their arm around me, or people would save me a seat in the meeting, and they would just talk, I mean, everybody bent down to talk to me, because I was really scared, like, they would kind of whisper to me, but, you know, they just welcomed me in, no matter what state I was in, and, you know, that's what I was told when I got here, was that I was, you know, didn't have to believe anything that anybody said in the meeting. They said, you know, my sponsor's boyfriend told me very clearly, don't, you know, if you don't believe it, you need to try it, though. He's like, you need to do it. You do this with your whole heart, and if it doesn't work, go back out. He's like, don't believe, you don't have to sit there and wonder if you believe what Joe Schmo in the meeting said. He's sharing his experience, you know, but you do it, you know, because if you do it, and then, you know, you have to know the truth in yourself. Like, nobody can do these steps for you. And he said that, like, just try this thing with your whole heart. Jump in with both feet and give yourself a chance. And that's what I did. And it turned out to be, like, I would have never thought, like, the answer to my problems would be coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, like, it's given me a life that I never thought that I could have. I don't remember. Most of my life I spent a very depressed person. Like, you know, I was in therapy and psychiatry, just, like, just very sad and unhappy. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous thinking that my actual really view of the world was that it was a pretty bad place because something bad things had happened to me. And I really just thought, like, there's no way anybody could possibly be happy. Like, it's impossible. And I thought the people who were happy that I saw in the streets were, like, full of it. I thought they were either really stupid or they were full of it, or they were, like, sometimes I actually thought people were trying to look happy. People I didn't know were trying to look happy to make me feel bad about myself. Like, I really thought that. I was just this cynical, bitter person, and I just wished that my life would end. I didn't see how I could be happy in this world, and AA's given me a way to be in myself, to, like, find and connect with this power in myself, my higher power, in myself, where, like, no matter whether things are going good or bad, I have this constant feeling inside that I know that there's something that's taking care of me, and I know that I might not get my way, but, like, it's not like when I feel bad, I don't feel like it's the end of the world. I feel like I just feel bad, but it's going to be better. Like, I don't think it's a catastrophe, and there's something very real that I can feel that I've connected with, and it's, you know, I didn't find it in church by myself. Like, I found it through AA, like, AA gave, like, led me to a way for me to, like, connect with something that I'd never, you know, that I'd wanted all my life and didn't even know I wanted all my life. And it allowed me to, like, have wonderful friends and relationships with my family and, you know, and the biggest changes have been those that have taken place inside. And I'm done talking. Thanks for letting me share.